I would now like to introduce tonight's speaker, Carolyn. Come on down, Carolyn. Let's everyone give her a big round of applause.
All right.
Oh, my. I think I'm okay. Good evening, everyone. My name is Carolyn, and I am an alcoholic. Sober by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship. First of all, I want to congratulate everyone that took time tonight, our birthdays, Kevin and Jay and Rick and Whitey. Congratulations, you know. It's important, I think, for the newcomers to see that this program really does work. And speaking of newcomers, Fernando and Dylan, you guys are the most important people here. Welcome. Welcome to a new way of life. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. Let's see, my sobriety date is September 7th, 1990. So I've been around for a couple of one day at a times. I've been drunk, I've been sober. I like sober better. That's it. No, I'm just kidding. let's see, my parents and I were all born in Pennsylvania. And so I'm from the East Coast, but my dad was in the Navy, and you know, like any good Navy man, he was stationed in San Diego. So when I was very young, we came here. And, you know, it was a pretty good life. We lived in Navy housing for the first 5 years of my life, and it was a blast. You know, my dad was gone most of the time, and all the moms had all the kids, and, you know, we did all kinds of fun things. Our next-door neighbor, her name was Miss Bunny, and she was a go-go dancer. She also was a flamingo dancer, and she was the mother of my very dear friend Phyllis. And so she would come over in the afternoon and bring her castanets and do some dancing for us, and she put her makeup on with this big mirror, and I wanted to be like her when I grew up. We had one of the only telephones in the building. This was many, many years ago. And so everyone wanted to be at our house because we had the telephone. You know, my mom, all her relatives were still in Pennsylvania, and she told my dad before he went overseas that it was important that she have some kind of contact with her family. So, you know, people would come over all the time, can we use your phone, can we use your phone? And at the time, it was a party line, so sometimes they'd have to pick up the phone and wait for the other neighbor to get off the phone, and so they could use the telephone. But, you know, it was good times as much as I can remember, and actually the first 4 years of my life were my best years, you know. It was all about me, you know. My brother and sister hadn't been born yet, so I got all the attention. You know, and then my sister was born when I was about four, and I was upset, you know, to say the least. My mom said I used to hide her bottle and her pacifier, and, you know, I didn't like sharing all that attention. And then a couple years later, my brother came along, and, you know, he was just, everyone wanted the boy, and he was my dad's son. And so me and my sister kind of got pushed to the side, and it was all about my brother. But me and my sister used to dress him up in dresses and put bonnets on him and stick him in the stroller and push him around. And my dad used to get really mad. Anyways, you know, growing up, it wasn't too bad, you know. My dad drank on occasion, but, you know, when he was in the Navy, he drank quite a bit. One day he came home pretty drunk and fell into the house with 10 pounds of raw hamburger when my mom was pregnant, and she had to clean it all up, and she wasn't very happy, and so she basically told him if he was going to drink you know, there was the door. So, you know, he didn't really drink that much, but he had some alcoholic tendencies, some of the behaviors, you know. My grandfather had a still, you know, he ran moonshine. So it kind of goes back in our family quite, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, alcoholism, it's a family disease. You know, I'm going to put it right like that. All of my uncles on my mom's side are alcoholic, you know. So chances are some of us were going to have that too, you know. And I always kind of felt like I didn't quite fit in, you know. Even in elementary school, you know, I didn't feel like I was in the right crowd or pretty enough or funny enough or, you know, whatever enough. And grade school was difficult for me until, I guess it was sixth grade, and one of my dear friends, Margie, her parents decided to go out for New Year's, and we had our first New Year's party with some alcohol. And of course, I had arrived. You know, all of a sudden, it was on. You know, I was all of a sudden pretty enough and smart enough and funny enough. And as a matter of fact, that night, I think I kissed somebody else's boyfriend. You know, what is that called? Liquid courage? Yeah. And it was pretty much on from then on. My junior high school years, we drank, and the summer between junior high and high school was really the worst for me. You know, I met my first husband, and he actually was another friend of mine's boyfriend at the time. And I was house sitting for them and watching their cat, and he called on the phone and I answered it, and next thing you know, we were at the park drinking some old English. And that got to be my favorite drink, you know. I don't know about you, but malt liquor sure does the job, and it does it quickly. So, you know, in high school, a couple of us girls would go to the liquor store, and while someone kept the clerk busy, then one of the other of us would, you know, sneak a six-pack of Old English in their purse, and it was on. You know, we'd go down to the park and drink until we blacked out. And I thought that was the goal. I thought that was the goal when you drank, to black out. I don't know how I made it through high school. It was kind of touch and go. But you know, it seemed like things always worked out. Like, we knew the counselor, so he would give us a pass to class. And I don't know. My mom always wondered about how I had 63 absences, you know, in some of my classes. But I would just tell her, you know, those computers, they've got to make a mistake. And somehow I graduated, you know. I shouldn't have. You know, but all along, it was the drinking, you know. That was the most important thing. I didn't care about school. I didn't care about going to class. I didn't care about going to college, none of it. I just was there to have a good time. You know, when I met my first husband, he actually went to a different school than I did. I went to Morris and he went to Lincoln. And I thought it was so romantic that he always had a bottle of something, you know. Being a good alcoholic that he was, you know, whether it was a bottle of gin and grapefruit juice or, you know, whatever it was, a bottle of anything. And I was like, how romantic, you know? You know, we'd go to the park and just drink and drink, and I thought it was just great. You know, my first husband was black, and when I brought him home to my parents, my dad came out with the shotgun. And said if he ever saw him again, he was going to shoot him. And so I married him. Yeah. I do have two beautiful children from that marriage. But it was a rocky marriage, you know. In addition to a lot of drinking that went on, there were some other party favors going on, you know, and it didn't go well. You know, we lived on a little in a little house over off of G and 31st, right off Market Street. And, you know, I loved that little house. It was up on a little hill, and you could see the lights of Tijuana, and I thought it was beautiful, you know, to sit out in the front porch and see the lights, you know. And we lived there for quite some time. And then things started to go downhill. He started to get arrested, and it wasn't so much fun anymore, you know. And he tried to go to rehab. It lasted about 2 days, and all the time he was a little bit worse off than I was, you know. That's kind of how I played it. Like, as long as you're a little bit worse off than me, I'm fine. You know, I was still going to work, you know, barely getting there on time, had lots of absences, but, you know, it got to the point where he wasn't working anymore. And then he was disappearing for weeks at a time, and so were some of the things that I wasn't accustomed to having disappear, like my wedding rings and my jewelry. And we ended up separating, and he went to prison for some drug charges. And there I was with two small children by myself. And I was a single mom. So I found myself a babysitter, someone that would feed my kids breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I was off and running again, you know. I didn't eat much, and as long as they were fed, that's all I cared about. And I went to work and partied at lunch, partied after work, and, you know, I drug those boys around to places they should have never been. I wasn't a very good mom, not at all. I'm not very proud of that. And I hid in the rooms of Al-Anon for a little while, you know, and one day one of the ladies said to me, "I think you're in the wrong room." And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "You might have a problem." And I said, "No, not me." And she said, "Well, if you cannot drink for 30 days, then I'll take it back. But if you can't not drink for 30 days, I want you to walk into that other room, into the AA meeting." And I couldn't go one day. I could do my other little thing, or I could drink, but I couldn't not do both. And for the first time, you know, I had to look at myself and my problem and not look at everybody else's. And so my son's birthday is 9/9, and on 9/7, I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. A couple days later, we went to Disneyland, and Disneyland is not the happiest place on earth when you have 2 days sober. Not at all. But for whatever reason, you know, I was able to stay sober. I didn't get a sponsor right away, but I didn't pick up. You know, and for a little while, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was able to keep me sober. My kids were 7 and 3 at the time, and, you know, I'd go to a meeting right when it started, and I'd leave right when it was over, because I really didn't want to get to know you. And I didn't want you to hug me. And I certainly thought that if you did get to know me, you wouldn't want to know me. You know, I was ashamed of who I was and what I had done. And, you know, I just wanted to hang on. You know, it was kind of like hanging on by the skin of my teeth. It was, I don't recommend that kind of sobriety. But eventually I did get a sponsor, and I started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I was alcoholic, and I knew that my life was unmanageable. When I got here, I was buying food on my last credit card that hadn't been over its limit just yet. My house was about to be in foreclosure. My bills weren't paid, you know, because there were other things that were important, like the drinking and the other things, you know, that had to come first. You know, it was, I was consumed with it. And so what I ended up doing is you know, talking to my parents, and they helped me feed my kids and feed me. And when I first got sober, and we made a plan, and I made a plan with some debt place, and they helped me get out of the foreclosure. And so by the grace of God, once again, I didn't lose my house. You know, I didn't lose my home for my kids. And things started to get a little bit better. You know, and I started to let people in just a little bit. And what happened was, is that especially the women, you guys loved me until I could learn to love myself, which is super important around here. If you're new here, maybe you know what I'm talking about. You know, we get here with so much guilt and shame and remorse, and it's just overpowering. But we don't really know what to do with it, you know? And the good news is everybody's been through it, right? Like, somebody in this room has been through what you've been through and can relate and will hold your hand and help you get through whatever you need to get through. So anyways, I ended up divorcing my first husband, and I tried to stay single. But a couple years later, I met another young man at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was so romantic. It was it was at the bonfire meeting. And I didn't have a jacket, and he had a leather jacket. And he was like, "Would you like my jacket?" And I was like, "Yes." And I married him, too. And, you know, we had a pretty good relationship for a while. And then what happened was he relapsed, you know. He relapsed and then got sober again and then relapsed again. But from that marriage, I got my daughter. And I'd always wanted a girl. And Sarah has never seen her mom under the influence of anything, ever, you know. And I got a second chance. You know, God gave me that second chance. And so I could be a good mom to her, you know, and try to be a good mom to my boys as well. And so I took her with me to campouts and meetings, and she grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I ended up having to go through a divorce in sobriety. So there I was again, now with three kids and a single mom one more time. But you know what? I had the fellowship. The fellowship carried me through. You know, it takes a village to raise children. And if you're a single mom, don't worry. You know, we're here for you. When she was a baby, let's see, she was born in August, and the campout is in September. So she went to the campout when she was a month old. Talk about insanity, right? Take a newborn baby to a campout and see how much fun you have. But I had this tent trailer, so I thought, well, the tent trailer will be fine. It'll be just like home, right? No. But what happened was everyone in the campground ended up taking turns with Sarah. And like for an hour, so-and-so would walk her back and forth, and then they'd hand her off. Because I was ready to pack up and leave. It was like 10 o'clock at night, and she was just screaming her head off. And I was like, that's it. I'm done. And they're like, no. We'll take turns. And so I think it was probably 1 or 2 in the morning before she finally went to sleep. But she did go to sleep, and we ended up staying for the camp out. You know, I don't know. I learned how to have fun in sobriety. When I first got sober, I was like, that's it. My life is over, right? Like, how do you ever have fun without being loaded or under the influence of something? You know, because that's how we did it, you know? And And you guys showed me how to have fun, how to go on campouts, you know, how to go to dances, how to go to comedy shows, whatever we did. I loved conventions. It was a blast, you know. It's a good life. So, you know, there is a solution. And what I found was it's kind of a two-part solution. For a while, you can stay sober in the fellowship. But what you really need to have is a spiritual experience, you know, or spiritual awakening, whichever that would be. I personally believe that it takes both to stay sober, you know, and it doesn't hurt to go to a ton of meetings. I don't know. I don't think you can stay sober with one or the other, but with both, it's the perfect combination. You know, when I first got sober, I went to a lot of meetings, like every day, every other day. You know, I was always running to meetings. And, you know, today, with over 30 years, I still go to like 3 or 4 meetings a week. 3 minimum, more if, you know, somebody's speaking or whatever. Because people that don't go to meetings aren't around to find out what happens to people that don't go to meetings. That's a fact. So, you know, I was taught early on that meeting makers make it. One of my first sponsors, her name was Vicky, and she was my sponsor early on, and she sponsored me for about 25 years. And it got to the point where I could just hear her in my head, you know, like if I had a problem or I did something stupid, I would call her, but I really didn't need to call her because I knew exactly what she was going to say. But what happened is she decided that she and her boyfriend were going to sell everything they had and buy this motorhome and go on the road. And I was devastated. I was like, oh no, what am I going to do without my sponsor? And so they sold everything and they went on the road, and it lasted 6 months. And they found out that they couldn't live in a motorhome together, and they ended up coming back. And I didn't know this, you know, I didn't know this. And I had got another sponsor, and, you know, that really didn't work out for me. She lived in Escondido, and it was really tough. She worked with me, but she lived in Escondido, and it just wasn't working for me. And we actually happened to be at a camp out, and I was sitting there just praying, like, what am I going to do? Who am I going to ask? You know, because I know for a fact that I cannot do this program alone, you know, that I need some guidance. Because if I have a really good idea, I better call somebody, you know, because it's not usually a really good idea. But anyways, I was sitting there at the camp out, and I'm watching this woman walk up the hill. And I'm like, wow, that looks like Vicky. That can't be Vicky. You know, she's gone. But it was Vicky. She had come to the camp out because she knew I went to the camp out. And she was looking for me, and she'd asked somebody at registration if they knew if I was there. And they told her where I was. And she walked back into my life. And it had been like almost a year. So, you know, her and I got to get back together and do some more work. And, you know, she was my sponsor for several more years after that. But, you know, since she passed away, she had cancer, and she passed away when I had about 25 years. And so I had to go on the journey to find a new sponsor. And God brought a great woman into my life. She's sitting here tonight, Nathine. What happened is I fell and tore my hamstring tendons from my tailbone, and I needed to have a ride to physical therapy. And Nathine graciously agreed to give me a ride, and so we got to know each other really well. And I asked her to be my sponsor, and she's still my sponsor today. Yay! So, anyways, if you're new here and you don't have a sponsor, get one. It's super important. I don't know what I would do without someone to run things by. And I also want to talk about someone else special in my life. So after my divorce from my second husband, we were at a picnic, and a lot of you guys know Paulette. And Paulette is my little guardian angel, and she was at the picnic with me that day and asked me if I was interested in talking to this guy. And it was this guy named Frank, and I had known Frank from other acquaintances, and I was like, I don't know. And she's like, you guys would be perfect together. And so she kind of hooked us up, and we went on a date. We went on our first date, and I found out that we had the same birthday. And I was like, uh-oh, meant to be. And what do they say? Third time's a charm? Yeah. Yeah, he's my charm. And, you know, we've been walking this journey together for many, many years now. We've been married 12 years, and I just feel so blessed. You know, we both work our own programs most of the time. And, you know, it's all about the fellowship and sponsorship and being of service. You know, Tom talked about being into action, and I learned early on that service was the key, and that was the place to be. When I first got here, I was the ashtray cleaner-outer. Because we still smoked in the meetings, right? That's how old I am. But and we also used to have real coffee cups, not styrofoam cups. So I also would alternate and do the coffee cup commitment, washing coffee cups. But, you know, that's how you get to know people in this fellowship, is by doing service. You know, if you're the coffee maker, you come early, you get to, you know, you get to meet everybody when they first get here. And it works. It definitely works. I want to talk a little bit about my little brother. When we were growing up, I had a lot of guilt behind all this. When we were younger, I kind of started my brother, you know, partying, and he started taking it to the next level. And in our garage, he built a fort up in the rafters, and it became the party place. And yeah. Anyways, and so for years he was drinking and using and partying and carrying on, and then I got sober, and you know, I wanted to give him this program, you know, and I tried to do that. You know, I went over to visit him, and I was like, Yes, you need to be sober, and you know, this is how it works, and come on. And he was like, no, thank you. You know, and his disease took him down a much darker path. And in 2018, my mom passed away. And I had to go pick up my brother from the park where he was living to bring him to the funeral. And he was living there with his two sons and their dogs. And, you know, this disease is funny. You know, it tells us we don't have a disease. And he would say, Carolyn, you should see the setup we have in the park. It's just great. You know, we even hooked into someone's electricity. And I was like, dude, do you hear what you're saying? That the setup is great? Come on now. And he couldn't see it. You know, he thought he had it going on in the park. And so I took him back to the park, and I dropped him off, and I said to him, you don't have to live like this. There is another way to live. If you ever want to do something different, call me, please. And I dropped him off. And that was June 16th, 1918. I mean, 2018. It was a long time ago. A long, long time ago. 2018. So June, and in October, I got a call from him. And he said, come get me. I'm ready. My prayers had been answered. You know, I've been praying for my brother for years and years. And I called detox. And you know, they never have a bed, right? And they said, we have a bed available. Can you bring him in the morning? And I said, absolutely. And I called my brother back and I said, I have some place for you tomorrow. Can you come at 10 o'clock? I'm going to come pick you up. Okay, okay. So I went to the park, pulled up. He was ready to go. I tried to get his son to go too, but his son didn't want anything to do with recovery. So I took my brother down to detox in National City and dropped him off. And I said, please stay and call me when you're done. So he did the detox, and then he went into the 10-day, I guess it is. It's across the street. And what happened in that detox is that members of Alcoholics Anonymous brought a panel to him. And he saw the solution firsthand. And he decided that he wanted what they had. And 10 days later, I got a phone call and my brother said, come get me. I graduated. So then, and it's funny because Matt, who's sitting here at this table, was one of those people on that panel. And when I picked up my brother, he's like, wait, I gotta go back in. This guy on the panel said that if I made it to graduation, he would sponsor me, but I had to graduate first. So he ran back in and got his phone number and came back out. And I drove him from detox straight over to South Bay Pioneers. And thanks to this house and to Matt and to our higher power, the God of our understanding, my brother stayed sober. It was a miracle. You know, he stayed in this house. I think he got here like a couple days before Halloween. And he got here the night of the dance, the Halloween dance. And he helped the ladies' auxiliary decorate for Halloween. He got into service the very first day he stepped foot in this house. You know, I'm forever grateful to this house. And he stayed upstairs for a year, and then he moved back to the back and got his very own little apartment. And in, I guess it would have been, I don't know when it was exactly, but May of, I guess, 2019, my brother was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. And I couldn't believe it, you know? It was like, why, God? But he went to the hospital over here to Scripps, and somehow they transferred him up to the Scripps Hospital in La Jolla, and they gave my brother a new esophagus. And they gave him 2 more years to live. And I got to spend those 2 years with my brother. You know, I got to spend those 2 years with him sober. And I got to rekindle that relationship. And it was beautiful. You know, we got to go to meetings together. We went to the boat races. We did all kinds of crazy stuff. And then in December of 2020, the day after Christmas, his son was murdered. And it was too much for my brother. So he stopped eating, he stopped really sleeping, doing much of anything, and he still went to work. You know, he lived here and he went to work every single day. He used to live upstairs from Rick. And he'd come downstairs every morning, say good morning to Rick, and go to work. And he was a shining example of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I aspire to be, you know, the example that he was. We buried his son on January 30th, I think it was, of 2021. And that night, my brother asked me to take him to the hospital. He said, Carolyn, I'm dying. And I said, no. And he said, yes. I think he died of a broken heart, you know. That was his son, and he wanted to get him into recovery so bad. But the fact of the matter is, this is a deadly disease. This disease wants us dead. And some of us have to die so that others can live. And Kenny had to be one of those, you know. My brother lasted a week. And then the doctors sent him home and said there was nothing more they could do. So I brought my brother home, and we got a hospice bed for him. And he came home on Tuesday. And on Wednesday morning, I was calling everyone saying, if you want to say goodbye, you need to be here. And that afternoon, my brother looked up at the ceiling, and he was like, Dad? He saw my dad. And that afternoon, he passed away. And I miss him every day, you know? But he got to be sober. He got to be sober for 2 years, you know? And we never know how much time we're going to have. Life is so short. You know, we have to live it to the fullest. And so I'm here to say that you just have today, you know? We have to do this program one day at a time. If you're here, you're supposed to be here. And it's a program of action. We have to act our way into right thinking. We can't think our way into right acting. But I'm really grateful to be sober. I don't really have much more to say. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, for sharing your story with us. Thank you so much. I'd also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. And we can now close in the usual manner with a prayer of Carolyn's choice.